It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. A funny thing has happened over the course of the last 3 years. Every time Congress does something to infringe upon our civil liberties, whether it's warrantless wiretapping, whether it's selling your personal data to the government, whether it's pretty much ignoring the Constitution to wage war in violation of the very principles that are in the Constitution and the very principles that are meant to be in the War Powers Act, the first thing I always think is, what would Dennis Kucinich do? The second thing I always think is, boy, I wish Dennis Kucinich was in Congress. Some of you may remember Dennis Kucinich not only from his previous appearances on this program, but from his runs for the presidency. He was also the mayor of Cleveland, very much a political prodigy. And then for years, he was very much a Mavericks maverick on Capitol Hill. And now that he's not there, Congress has a much easier time doing things like renewing warrantless wiretapping and going to war without a declaration to do so. Well, now, believe it or not, the former congressman of Ohio, Dennis Kucinich, is making a comeback attempt. He's running for Congress once again, this time as an independent in Ohio's 7th District. I am very pleased to welcome to the program former congressman, former Democratic candidate for president, and former mayor of Cleveland, Dennis Kucinich. Congressman, it's great to have you back.
Frank, thank you. It's always great to talk with you, and this is a very exciting time. People want information about the campaign generally can go to Kucinich.com. But this is an important race because should I be elected, I would very well be the only independent elected in this cycle to the Congress or to the House of Representatives. And with Congress being split just almost down the middle, this vote could be a decisive vote for the country. So, you know, even though the district is in northern Ohio, I'm very excited about the possibilities, and so are apparently people around the country because they're getting help coming from all directions now.
Well, count me among those. As someone that can't vote for you but has been following this race much more closely than any congressional race in my home state, I am somebody that's very excited about the prospect of your return. So I want to pick your brain on a few different issues, but let's begin with that. The fact that you had represented Ohio as a Democrat, although a maverick Democrat, no doubt, throughout your career. Why run as an independent this time around rather than a Democrat?
Well, I'm running in a Republican district, and I've always done well with Republican voters. When I was redistricted out, I lost a Democratic primary because my district was chopped into four pieces, and the one part that I could run in was stretched to Toledo, Ohio, about 100 miles away from my base. So, you know, I'm back now because there was a new redistricting a year ago that put about 45% of my old district in this district in which I'm running. I can win this because I have the name recognition. People know me. My office has worked for people over a period of 16 years that I spent in Congress. We handled over 150,000 requests for service and involving everything you can imagine, you know, from passports, Social Security, Medicare, anything that people needed help from the government, we were there. So, Frank, this race opened up, and I really feel, you know, I've been a maverick. That's true. But I felt that the best way I could serve right now is to get out of the polarization, which is ripping our country apart. It is defeating the whole essence of America, which is unity. And to then put country above party so that we can, I can work with people on both sides of the aisle and show the potential of a new direction that is not dictated by party bosses.
You normally would have to answer the question that a lot of very cynical talk radio listeners would ask of, even if you're elected, what difference can one independent make? But I think you've already answered that in indicating that because the House is so closely divided, you could actually become the most powerful member of the House, being a crucial swing vote on issue after issues. But the other area that folks will always ask about, and, you know, Cornel West, Jill Stein and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. are getting this question a lot on the national basis, isn't a vote for a third party or independent candidate a wasted vote? By voting for you, aren't I making it more likely that the incumbent Republican, I believe is Max Miller, that he's going to win?
Well, he won the last time when it was just between he and a Democrat who put a name on the ballot. I mean, he won in a two-way race. So I'm not splitting any vote from somebody who has a chance to win. And not only that, I have a real base here. I have name recognition. I have public service, 16 years. And I have the ability to get votes across the aisle, proven ability to win in Republican areas where Democrats, you know, previously couldn't. Why? Because my approach is common sense. I'm practical in the way that I approach things. And I think war is devastating to our country as well as other places. Our national debt is over the top. We have to start, you can't have a country without borders. I mean, there's just some common sense approaches that I've taken, and it's resonating. So, no, if there's, you know, I could argue that in this election, this race is different from perhaps every other congressional race in the country in that I'm running in part of my old district, a big part of my old district, and I have a base, and I'm running strong. And again, people that want more information or want to help can go to Kucinich.com, because this, I'm not doing this alone, but I am actively campaigning, Frank. I've been, just in the last couple of days, I've been to events all across the district, and I'm getting a great reception. And people know the name. When they go to the ballot, they're going to see my name, and they're going to vote for somebody they know and trust.
Why do you want to do this? You had been in the House for years, and I am sure at various times throughout your House career that it was a frustrating experience. We're seeing both Democrats and Republicans, including people that haven't been there very long, leave the House of Representatives in droves with a lot of the same complaints, that it's frustrating, that they feel like it's too toxic, that they can't get anything done. You've done a lot of things since leaving the House. You've run a national presidential campaign, which did a lot of things that nobody expected it to do. You were a pundit for Fox News. You interviewed the president of Syria. You've done a lot of other things since leaving the House. Why do you want to go back right now at this point in your life and at this point in where the country is?
Well, the country's in trouble. I mean, we are at the threshold of the destruction of our own country because of decisions that are made to potentially put us, inject us into a war in the Middle East. We're financing it, but America get pulled into it, into a war against Russia. We're financing a war against Russia. We could get pulled into a wider war and a war against China. There's people who are spoiling for that. At this time in our country's history, it is urgent to stand up and point to a new direction. We don't have to go to war. We don't have to keep breaking the bank with these wars. We don't have to give up our basic rights, our constitutional rights. Every one of our First Amendment rights, right to assemble, right to free speech. There's an attack, a full-fledged attack right now on the First Amendment. As I said, the Fourth Amendment's under attack because the government just passed a bill with the help of Congress to expand spying where no one's information on the Internet is safe anymore. Anything you say can be scanned. The government can go ahead and search your information without a warrant. It's a nightmare. So why do I want to go back? Because I want to help save this country from destruction. This is a great country. It's a country that I love deeply. And I'm not going to stay on the sidelines when I see what's going on right now. And I think I can make a difference. And I've proven for people, you know, for years when I was in Congress, that my presence there made a difference on a lot of major issues. And as an independent, It'll be even more impactful.
Well, if people are just tuning in, we're talking with former congressman and current independent candidate for Congress in Ohio, Dennis Kucinich. You can learn more about his candidacy at Kucinich.com. That's Kucinich with a K. Congressman, let me pick your brain on a few of the issues that you just alluded to. Begin with the reauthorization of Section 702 of FISA. Why is this a big deal? This was one of the rare instances where you had Democrats and Republicans on the Hill celebrating this as a victory, even after a Republican presidential nominee, Donald Trump, asked them not to. They still passed an extension, albeit only a 2-year extension. Why should Americans be worried about this?
Well, you know, keep in mind that there was a an amendment called the Biggs Amendment that would have required a warrant to have any kind of a search of an American's digital information. That failed in a tie vote. There again, had I been there, one person making a difference, I would have voted for the Biggs Amendment, and the bill that finally passed would have required a search warrant, which is the key for any kind of government investigation, which is the key issue here. So the reason why this is important, you know, I mean, from my point of view, government should stay out of people's lives unless they're asked to help. This idea of enabling government to be able to search people's personal information without a warrant is destructive of the right to privacy. It shreds the Fourth Amendment. It puts us on the verge of a police state. Hey, I didn't sign up for any of that, and I don't think any Americans did. And people have to rely on individuals who understand the Constitution. And when you take an oath to defend it, you got to mean it. And so I mean it. I am there to I will return to Congress with the help of the people to defend the Constitution and to make sure that these attacks that are coming every day from different directions against the Constitution and some of our most cherished rights, that those attacks are set aside because somebody needs to blow the whistle and say what's going on.
One of the messages that I got when I was parroting many of the things that you wrote in your commentary on this, in full agreement with everything you said just now and previously on this issue, was from a lot of listeners who disagreed, particularly listeners in the New York area that remember September 11th. I got one message from a listener that wrote, "I'm sure the people that jumped off the top of the World Trade Center would be okay with their rights being violated a little if we could have stopped 9/11. I have no problem with this FISA bill. They're not going to bust me for hiring hookers or anything else." Speak to those people in our audience, if you can, Congressman, people that view themselves as law-abiding citizens. Why should they care if the government's spying on them when they're not doing anything wrong, and they would gladly have people spy on their conversations if it means stopping a 9/11-like event?
Well, first of all, we have to look at the long line of American foreign policy, which went off the rails, that made us vulnerable prior, you know, to a 9/11 type attack. Then we have to ask ourselves, or let's go back to Ben Franklin. He said those who would give up any, you know, any, a measure of their liberties to achieve a bit of safe security do not deserve either. And why? Because we have a constitution that guarantees that the government shall not be able to search anyone, any American's effects or business, or seize anything unless there is a warrant. And it relates to the Fourth Amendment. It also relates to due process of law. When we start to chip that away, we're not America anymore. We're some other country. That Constitution was meant to hold forth for an undreamed of future. And it is under attack right now. If we say, well, you know, I'm not doing anything wrong, what do I have to worry about? That's not the point. Look, the government, one of the problems with our government today is the politicization of the justice system. You know, prosecutors can indict a ham sandwich if they want to. And I mean, I've been in politics 57 years. And you know, I started as young as anyone can. That time, I have seen the politicization of the Justice Department over and over and over. And so when you have that happen and you have the government functioning in a way that they can, you know, that they can use the power to prosecute, you know, against anybody, that's a problem. And I don't want government to have that power. I want government to be able to follow the law that as is prescribed in the Constitution of the United States. And once we start saying, well, you know, whatever government wants, no, bad, 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 bad.
One of the things that Congress has also done, which has proven quite controversial in some quarters, is it looks like they're going to move forward with this legislation to force ByteDance, the company that owns TikTok, to divest and sell it off to an American company, or it'll be essentially banned. Give me your view on this. The people that are concerned about TikTok, they point to the risks of a Chinese company having access to a social media network that is so ubiquitous, particularly among younger Americans, and having the access to the data of all those folks, and concerns about things like spying from the Chinese government, also potentially some concerns about propaganda based on the algorithm of videos that are shown in TikTok. What do you think of this TikTok bill and how it was handled in Congress?
Well, first of all, I'm not for the government cooperating with tech companies or tech companies cooperating with the government to be able to divulge people's private information. And China has a different political system. But I'm, you know, just to make a point here, the ban on TikTok has to be put, or the attempt to ban TikTok, has to be put in a larger perspective where there are people who are doing everything they can to set the stage for conflict with China. Now, you know, the tech companies now have, in the States, have information about us. And we participated in it willingly because we post this stuff, we put our name, our information on the web. But TikTok is something that we need to have a broader debate about, because does the freedom that Americans have end at the water? Or are we free to transact commerce, information with people around the world? I mean, this is a really interesting question. And one of the other things, you know, as somebody who voted against China trade, I was one of the people who in Congress worked vigorously to knock back China trade,
mm-hmm.
because the most favored nation status has given China an ability to outmaneuver Americans, to drive down wages in this country, making cheap products abroad, to eliminate environmental standards in some cases and human rights concerns. And China's done it at a profit. There is the biggest with China is, in my view, is not TikTok. It's a trade loophole which enables them to move hundreds of billions of dollars into of goods into the country and escape tariffs or duties under a loophole called de minimis. And it is there are certain members of Congress that recently have tried to close that loophole, but China's walking away with extraordinary amounts of money. The U.S. Treasury should be recouping, but that loophole lets it go. And one of the reasons why they've been able to get away with it is a China trade was pushed by corporations that were headquartered mm-hmm. in America.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, talk about whose allegiance do you have, you know, to what country. So I'm, you know, TikTok is an issue. It deserves discussion, but I have to be very careful about anything that would infringe on the rights of Americans to get information from wherever they want and exchange information anywhere in the world. And if our concern is foreign ownership, boy, I'll tell you, that cow escaped the barn many, many years ago.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Congressman, I know it's late, but there's two hot button foreign policy issues that I want to ask you about before we run out of time here. One gets Republicans very worked up. One gets Democrats very worked up. Let me begin in chronological order. The war in Ukraine, the aid package recently passed by the House, gives another $60 billion or so of military aid in Ukraine. The people pushing this says this is essential not only to help the Ukrainians who did not ask to be invaded, but it's essential in basically standing up to Vladimir Putin, who's an authoritarian, who, if he gets away with what he's trying to get away with in Ukraine, is going to try to march all over Eastern Europe. That's the way the argument sort of goes. I know your view on the Ukraine situation. Something tells me you would have not voted for that $60 billion in military aid. Am I correct? And if so, why?
Well, you know, first of all, I know the whole history here. I know that the United States government knocked off a duly elected government in Ukraine in 2014 and installed a guy who was willing to go with the U.S. program of attempting to soften up Russian leadership for either blocking them from participating in the economy of Europe in a wide way, and outmaneuvering them in markets. Look, I my heart breaks for the Ukrainian people and what they've been through and how they've been manipulated and played on this issue. The Ukrainians are fiercely independent and believe strongly in freedom, and I support them in that. What I don't support is the United States and some of our other so-called allies manipulating things when there was a chance to have an agreement a couple of years ago that would have ended the conflict, just setting it aside and continuing to fuel the conflict with arms, which had led to a situation that has created a destruction of a wide swath of Ukraine, over 600,000 deaths. And again, it is mind-boggling that we wouldn't have worked for a peaceful resolution that would have stopped the blood from flowing. Now, what about this legislation? $61 billion. Well, Frank, 80% of it goes to America's military industrial complex. Mm-hmm. It's not going to Ukraine. Mm. Oh, people are saying, well, there's to make arms that are going to send to Ukraine. Really? Do you know what the time curve is in the manufacture of some of these armaments? You know, it can be anywhere from 3 to 6 months to several years. And then, you know, some of the ordnance or the material that would go there, you know, certain types of sophisticated missile systems, people have to be trained to use them. It's like a magic game that's going on here, and it's cynical. And they're putting more of, you know, we're building up this military industrial complex that Eisenhower warned about years ago, and we're hosing the American taxpayer. Our country's now $34 trillion in debt and rising, and all these bills are going on the national credit card. I mean, we have to start thinking about how do these decisions affect the American people. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you know, our first obligation is to America. It's not to any other country in the world. And we have to start looking at our foreign policy in a different way. You know, we can't pretend that we can, you know, dictate policy all around the world. I don't like things that are going on in Russia, but it's not up to me to tell Russia who their leader should be. I don't like things going on in China. It's not up to me to tell the Chinese who their leader should be. And so we, don't want other countries interfering in our politics. We have to stop this effort to try to rule the world and start paying attention to things here at home. We have people still living in the street. We have people can't afford a home. We have people can't afford their mortgage. People can't afford rent. People are having trouble meeting the cost of inflation, electricity, energy, can't get their kids the education they'd like to pay for, you know, can't meet the health care expenses. And we just spent another $95 billion to keep wars going at different levels. This is insane. And I'm not buying it.
Leslie,
I mean, I'm sorry. You know, this whole system right now needs to be challenged. And if I get a chance to return to Congress, I'm going to lead the way because I understand exactly how it works. I know how corrupt it's become. I know how they wave the flag and then they have their pockets in the hands of the taxpayers, pockets. And then they ask you to sing the Star Spangled Banner.
Lastly, while it's the right that tends to get a little worked up over American aid to Ukraine in the current conflict, it's the left that tends to get more worked up about American aid to Israel in the current conflict that they're dealing with. If you were in Congress now, and I know you were in Congress when Israel had their war against Hezbollah and Lebanon back in 2006, if you were in Congress now, what would you be doing to try to handle this Middle East situation as it relates to Israel and Iran and Israel and Hamas?
Well, first of all, I don't have any trouble, with America defending Israel, but I have a lot of trouble with paying for Israel to go on the offense. You know, we better know the difference between offense and defense here. And, you know, I was a third string quarterback on a not very good high school football team. And Frank, I know the difference between defense and offense. And the money that has been given to Israel has been used to go on offense. And I know people don't want to hear the word genocide, but it's genocide. They don't want to hear ethnic cleansing, but it's ethnic cleansing. And they don't want to hear that it's deliberately induced starvation, but that's exactly what's happening with respect to the Palestinians. Now, we have to have a world where people, they may not like each other, but they have to understand that we have to have a world to live and let live. And that's not where we are right now. You know, people who are in Netanyahu's cabinet still have this dream of, Israel should control all the land out there. And to do it in a way, it doesn't matter who you kill. I mean, the Palestinians are not Amalek, okay? No matter how much someone wants to project a history of 2,000 years ago upon them. And so, you know, that this kind of carnage is happening in 2023 and 2024 is extraordinary. Now, I don't hold any brook or brief for Hamas or for any of those other groups that want to visit terror upon the people of Israel. But we have to find a way to come to an agreement which does not in any way sanction or license the massacre of innocent people, whether they're Israelis or Palestinians or any other group. And so, you know, the science of human relations can be actually applied here. But America seems to think that we can solve things. Our leaders seem to think we can solve things just by having providing one side with more and better guns. And, you know, we needed to set conditions for Prime Minister Netanyahu. We didn't do that. I mean, if you don't want somebody to bomb, you don't give them bombs. I mean, it's just, what are we talking about here? And again, I would not hesitate to defend Israel's right to survive, but I can tell you that I also will not hesitate to defend the rights of the Palestinians to survive.
Well, I have to end it there. Congressman, I always learn a great deal by talking with you. I appreciate the time. I know it's late. Wishing you the best of luck. I hope we can chat quite a bit between now and the election.
Frank, I'd appreciate that. And again, if people could go to Kucinich.com. I'd be glad to hear from you, or if you want to provide some help, that's great. Let's stay in touch, and thanks again.
Thank you. If you want to comment on any portion of our conversation, you're welcome to give me a call at 1-800-848-9222. That's 800-848-9222. This is The Other Side of Midnight, straight ahead.